First, have you ever tried to learn a new language? Maybe you did it in school. Maybe you're in the process of learning one right now. Even if it was a challenge, research from around the world shows it's worth the effort. Being multilingual can boost everything from our creativity and critical thinking to our cognitive health. Our next guest has spent years studying the connection between language and the brain, and that's the subject of her new book. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you grow up with more than one language? Have you taken language classes as a kid or a grown-up? What was the best way for you to learn that second language? Did it come naturally? Or are you like me, and it's tough to learn another language? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Viorica Marion is the Ralph and Jean Sundin Endowed Professor of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Northwestern University. She's the author of the new book, The Power of Language, How the Codes We Use to Think, Speak, and Live Transform Our Minds. Viorica, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Before we dig into the benefits of learning more languages, this is your life's work in a lot of ways. What is it that you find so fascinating about the connection between language and our brains?
I've always loved languages and been interested in the relationship between language and mind. I think most people think about us, our brains producing language, and don't understand that this relationship between language and mind is bidirectional. The languages we use also shape the way we think, shape our minds and our brains. So growing up with more than one language, I've always been interested in this relationship between mind and language.
Let's talk a little bit about how our brain handles language. There was some thought, I think, that, hey, here's a language center for our brains. And as we like analyze and scan our brains, we're going to figure out where language is coming from. If I'm reading you right, Viorica, it's a lot more complicated than that. Can you tell us about that?
That's right. So I actually myself, when I first started, was, you know, almost 30 years ago, was interested in seeing whether one language is located in one part of the brain and another language in another part of the brain. And that's a question I get asked often. But it turns out the brain is a much more distributed network of processing. So both languages share much of this network, and language itself is this broad network of activation in various areas of the brain that change depending on whether we comprehend language, produce language, whether we're focusing on meaning or form or syntax. So it's really a very complex neural activity.
Now, a lot of the history of the study of language has been on people who maybe speak only one language, like me. You and some of your colleagues are expanding that. What kind of things are we starting to learn about language by studying people like you who grew up with more than one language?
Well, you know, I think that if we only study monolingual brains and monolingual minds, we're missing a big part of the picture. And we're getting an incomplete and really inaccurate understanding of the human potential, of the potential of the human mind. And think about this as being similar to how in the field of medicine, heart disease at one point was studied only in men and later found to be manifesting differently in women, or diabetes was studied primarily in white populations, only to later discover that the indigenous populations of North and South America process sugar differently. In the same way, if we only study monolingual brains, we are really leaving out a lot of important information out. And especially considering that, in fact, the majority of the world's population outside the United States is bilingual and multilingual. So it's very, very common in many countries all around the world to grow up with more than one language. And even in the United States, those numbers are changing. So it is increasingly becoming important to not limit our research to a very small, narrow subset of what are called weird populations that represent only a small, so weird because they are coming from white, educated, industrialized, and rich democratic nations, which are the minority of the world's population. So in order to really understand the human mind, the human potential, we need to expand our definition of that.
Talking to Viorica Marion. Her new book is called The Power of Language, How the Codes We Use to Think, Speak, and Live Transform Our Minds. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you're trying to learn a new language right now, we'd love to hear about that. If you grew up speaking more than one language, what was that like for you? How did it shape the way you think, or the way you think you think? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's get into multilingual people here, Viorica. And one thing people might wonder about is for kids, the worry, and I wondered about this too, the worry that, okay, if a kid is brought up with two languages at the same time, are they going to be confused? Is it going to slow down their language growth? You have a pretty solid answer on this one in the book.
Yeah, that's a very common misconception. We often think that, and even advise people not to raise children with more than one language. And there is absolutely no evidence for that. Our human brain is built to be able to handle multiple codes of communication. And if you think of codes of communication as going beyond language and including other symbolic systems like math, like music, like nonverbal communication, you can see that the brain is able to seamlessly learn and integrate and master all these forms of communication. So multiple natural languages can be accommodated just as well. And you can see this in children and in infants all around the world growing up with multiple languages. And in the United States, we often see differences across social economic classes. So upper classes, upper middle classes usually understand the benefit of raising children with multiple languages, and often, sign them up for lessons, language lessons, or hire tutors, or send them on programs abroad, and really understand that being bilingual and multilingual has all these benefits, economic benefits, social benefits, lifelong wonderful outcomes, and encourage that. And then on the other side of the spectrum, we often have groups that are the lower social economic status that are actively discouraged from speaking another language under the assumption that's damaging or confusing or bad for them. And there is, again, no evidence for that. And a lot of those recommendations come from biases that are really rooted in something else rather than really language.
Let's bring in a caller at 800-642-1234. Susan is with us in Coon Valley. Susan, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to ask about, Susan?
Well, I'm just curious what your speaker's advice would be about the older people. I'm talking about retired people. What would be the best way for them to learn another language? Because there's many of us who did not have language when we were younger, variations of language. So I'm wondering what she thinks is the best route to go to learn another language.
Great question, Susan. Viorica, what advice do you have for Susan?
Yeah, thanks for bringing up this topic, Susan. It's actually an excellent topic. And before I go into the how, if you would let me, I'll tell you a little bit about some of the benefits for aging,
please.
And the aging brain. Yeah, so we now know that individuals who know two or more languages tend to develop dementia, Alzheimer's, and other types of dementia on average 4 to 6 years later than individuals who only speak one language. And countries that are bilingual or multilingual have a lower incidence of Alzheimer's. So it really does seem to be the case that having multiple languages and giving your brain this constant workout of juggling multiple languages translates to positive neural and cognitive health outcomes later in life, what's known as cognitive reserve and neural reserve. And the analogy I like to give is if you imagine taking a certain road home every day for many years, and then one day on your way home, that road collapses. If there are other roads that have been built to your house over the years, you will have no problem rerouting and getting to your destination. But if that's the only road that has been built, then you are in trouble. And in the same way, when you have multiple languages, if one neural pathway in the brain has been impacted and is no longer available to you, because you have multiple languages that have built memories, associations, experiences over the years, you are able to rely and compensate functionally for that anatomical deterioration. So it's a wonderful thing to learn another language as you get older. As far as how to do it, the one thing I would say is to choose something that you can engage in long-term, every day, systematically. So you, it's something that's sustainable. And then from there, choose a way that works best for your personality. Some people prefer to engage in social interaction on learning language. So maybe trade language lessons with someone. Some people prefer to do it on their own online. You can also trade language lessons online or use apps. There is a really a variety of apps right now that are built in a way that takes advantage of game design and rewards learning with all sorts of badges and pings and really gets the serotonin and endorphins and all the positive chemicals going, so you are motivated and inclined to keep up with your lessons. So whatever really is likely to get you to continue and stay with your practice will be very helpful. Make sure you do it regularly. And from there on, the only other thing to consider is just really think about what language you're most likely to find an affinity for. Is this a language that maybe means something for you because of your personal and family background, or because you have people you'd like to communicate with in that language, or you'd like to travel to that country, or you'd like to watch entertainment, consume entertainment in that language? So if you have something to which you're connected and you do this because you enjoy it rather than yet another thing to do, if you make it an enjoyable, pleasant activity, then you're much more likely to stick with it. And that's what it comes down to, like exercise or investing or anything else. If you do it long term, little by little, it's eventually going to produce the benefits that you're looking for.
Susan, thanks for calling. Hope that helps. We're talking to Viorica Marian, professor of communication sciences and disorders at Northwestern University. She's the author of the new book, The Power of Language. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about speaking more than one language. If you do personally speak more than one, when and how did you learn them? Did you grow up, or did you learn them in school or on the job or in a foreign country? Let us know. If you're like me and tried and, you know, only sort of succeeded, you could share that story too. You could join in at 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk now with Viorica Marian, professor of communication sciences and disorders at Northwestern University, talking with her about her new book. It's called The Power of Language, about language, our brains, and the benefits of learning a second or third or fourth language. You could join in with your own story or your questions at 800-642-1234. Mike is with us now in Milwaukee. Mike, hello.
Hi. Just wanted to let you know that in Milwaukee, for many years now, at least since the early 90s when my kids started going to these schools, we have at least four language immersion schools, Italian, I believe, German, French, and Spanish. And they learn in four-year-old kindergarten, five-year-old kindergarten, first and second grade. I believe they're only taught in the second language, whether it's German or Spanish or French. And then they're taught in both languages. And they learn to speak, to communicate with the teacher in the second language. And then when they're tested at the fourth grade for the reading levels, they score way at the top, if not first place.
Wow.
In the state or score. So you don't have to worry about them having problems later in learning, because they learn very well.
I gotcha, Mike. Thanks for that call. Viorica, in our schools here in the U.S., often you don't have a foreign language option until high school. Some people like me don't hit one until college. What do you think of this idea, like as Mike talks about, starting early, much earlier, with something like an immersion school?
Yeah, there are multiple types of bilingual education, but the two-way immersion approach that Mike just mentioned is one of the best ways to bring up children with multiple languages. And by the end, they are fluent in both languages. And Mike is right. There are data suggesting that they score higher on reading and math scores, and this is true for both students from the language majority culture as well as for students from the language minority culture. So you see academic benefits, but you also see social, interpersonal, and personal benefits in terms of interpersonal skills, identity, self-confidence. It just seems to be a really beneficial way of raising children with two languages and results in fluency. So it's a wonderful model. It's very rare because it's more expensive to support, but it is absolutely an excellent way of growing up with two languages. And like we said before, in many countries around the world, it's the norm to grow up with more than one language. So my native language is Romanian. That's the language I spoke at home. And then the official language at the time I was growing up, because I'm from the eastern part of Romania, from Moldova, that was a Soviet republic. It was a Soviet territory. So Russian was the official language. And then English, and then a few other languages sort of get picked up. And then on my husband's side of the family, he grew up with Dutch as the native language, but also is fluent in English, German, some Spanish, some French. And that's really the norm in many places. So it can be a really enriching, both linguistically and culturally, and interpersonally experience.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Before I go back to our callers, Eureka, that you just reminded me of something that I think I learned from your book. You know, the second language is one thing, but that makes it easier to learn language number three, and then that makes it easier to learn language number four. Do I have that right?
Yes, you're right. With each new language you learn, it becomes easier and easier to learn more languages.
Why?
We don't exactly know. There are a number of ideas and theories. Partly it's because you just get better at learning. You know what to pay attention to. You also are better at controlling competition from the languages you already know and interference. But also with each new language, you have less new information to learn. So when you first learn a new language, there's just so much to learn from, you know, rules of grammar and meaning and form to meaning mapping. Then when you learn a second language, some of those grammatical rules are going to be the same. So you do learn, and even some words will be the same. So you learn new information, but not as much as the first time around. And then as you learn a third language, this third language will overlap in some ways with the first language, in some ways with the second language, in some ways with both. So if you think of it in terms of Venn diagrams, with each new language, your total surface of the Venn diagram circles grows, but the unique surface that's specific to just one of those circles becomes smaller and smaller. So learning promotes learning, and with new learning, you sort of become better at learning. It's not just for language in general. Sort of learning is this virtuous cycle. The more you learn, the better you get at learning.
Talking to Eureka Marianne about her new book, The Power of Language. Back to your calls now. Robin is with us in Delafield. Robin, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to tell us about?
I just want to say I'm 56, and I have a daughter who has lived in Sweden for 6 years. She's now a Swedish citizen, and I decided about a year ago to start studying Swedish. And it's just been, it's like I consider it like my brain workout. it's been so challenging, but it's like in a really good way and frustrating too at times, just because when you just talked about learning other languages, literally there are times when I answer questions in my class, just like yes or no questions, I tap into my high school Spanish. It's hilarious, like what it starts to unlock in your brain when you do learn other languages, like other things pop up. But I have to say, I am all for learning other languages because, like you just said, it is such a good thing for our overall learning. And I feel like it's keeping me younger. And then it's also just providing me a level of comfort. You know, when I travel to visit my daughter, everyone speaks English in Sweden. But, you know, the whole culture and everything in writing is in Swedish. So it's just kind of a nice thing to have.
Robin, thanks so much for sharing that story. Eureka, Robin says her Spanish pops back when she's learning Swedish. I had that. I was never so good at German as when I was trying to learn Polish. What's happening in our brains when we're reaching for that new language we're trying to learn and it reaches back to that one we tried to learn before?
Yeah, thanks. And Robin's experience is wonderful to hear about. She is right to describe that's the word she used, brain workout. And that's exactly really, in a way, what happens. Your brain has to constantly work out to control competition from all these languages to make sure that you are using the language you need to be using and not the other languages. Cognitive, like right now I'm speaking to you in English, I have to make sure my cognitive control mechanisms doesn't let Romanian or Russian or French or Spanish pop out, because they don't do us any good. So your brain is constantly working out, and what's really nice about that is that unlike other types of cognitive exercise that people often engage in, like word puzzles or Sudoku, which, you know, of course, are wonderful and fun, in those cases, you have to take time out of your life to actively do those. But once you're fluent in another language, your brain constantly gets that exercise just by your way of being in the world, because you're constantly facilitating or co-activating or prioritizing one language and then controlling interference from the other language. Whether you are speaking, listening to music, reading, whatever you are doing, you have to juggle multiple languages. So it's a constant workout, which is why it's just such an enriching experience. But yes, Robin is right that all languages are co-activated in parallel. So our brain has to make sure it controls co-activation.
Thanks for that call, Robin. Just briefly, Viorica, you talk about languages. You know, we think of English and Swedish and Spanish and so on. But you also talk about music and computer programming and poetry as kinds of language. In just our last minute, how do they resemble those other things we think of as languages?
Yeah, that's a great question, because, of course, they are different in so many ways. But one thing that they have in common is that they're all symbolic systems. They all use symbols, which is what languages are, to encode, transmit, and decode information. As I'm speaking to you now, my brain uses the symbolic system of language to encode my ideas, to encode my thoughts into words, transmit them to you, and then your brain decodes them into ideas again and thoughts to be able to comprehend what I'm saying. The same thing happens with math, where we encode complex ideas into simple notations, with music, to really transmit information across time and space. So that's one of the wonderful things that languages enable us to do, including artificial languages like computer languages.
Viorica, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure to talk to you and your listeners.
That's Viorica Marian, professor of communication sciences and disorders at Northwestern University. We've been talking about her new book. It's called The Power of Language: How the Codes We Use to Think, Speak, and Live Transform Our Minds.